in there, yeah, pending council approval.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, Neil?
Actually, I had a question about the summary of sources and uses of funds and estimated reserve balances. I think this is really interesting. It sort of shows kind of where we are at the beginning of the year, what we expect at the end, what's going to come in, what we're going to spend. But could you talk me through some of the negative dollars on some of our specific plans and how, you know, how that got to be?
Sure. Historically, back in the early 2000s, when a lot of these larger specific plans came to fruition, we had entered into agreements with consulting firms to start the planning and design phases of these specific plans with the intent that once development occurs, they would reimburse the city. In these two particular cases, Chandler Ranch and then the Beechwood specific plans, the construction or the development of those took quite some time. And so we've been carrying these receivable balances for several years. We don't do that anymore. If we have any developer comes in that wants to do these specific plans, we do make them put a deposit down immediately versus waiting for development to happen. Now, both the development agreements for Olson South Chandler and Beechwood have provisions in there so that when they start contributing offsite improvements, this will clear out these receivable balance that we have on the books and get it whole.
That's great. And then just a general comment, these budgeting documents are fabulous. I mean, they really tell the whole story about what's going on in the city by department, staffing levels, capital projects, looking in the past and looking in the future. If you want to know sort of what's on our short, medium, and long-term radar about the kind of things that we're planning for and we're setting aside money for, these documents are fabulous. So great job, Brian.
Thank you, Chris. Anyone else, council? We're going to open up the public, then we'll bring it back for further discussion, particularly about this community partners thing. I want to make sure we get all things cleared. Jeffrey, welcome.
Good evening, council. Jeffrey Wiesinger, interim executive director of Paso Robles Main Street Association. In regards to the budget, we are disappointed that we'll be seeing a little over $11,000 reduction in our budget, but we're going to keep on pressing on. So I do want to extend our appreciation to the council and to city management that you see the value in our organization. We have a long history in our community of marketing the downtown district, putting on community events, and working with our partners in the community. So with the Wine Alliance receiving an additional $20,000 and then the Chamber getting a $9,000 reduction, I see that as an opportunity for us to really start working closer together to do what we can to promote the mom and pop businesses in downtown. That's what Main Street is all about, the small business owners in downtown. We're going to do what we have to do to kind of make up that difference, and that may include raising our membership dues, putting on some more events that can help us generate revenue. It's going to be a difficult task. We're in some tough economic times right now, but we are very much committed to pushing forward and keeping our organization going and making a bigger impact in our community. This is a two-year budget cycle, if I'm understanding this correctly. There was some discussion about a three-year, so we anticipate being able to have this $105,667 funding for the next two fiscal years, and be on the lookout for Main Street, because we are in a brave new direction. We're looking forward to taking the organization to the next level and really trying to drive tax revenues to put into the coffers of our of you guys as a whole, as our community. So we're going to keep up the good fight. Thanks for seeing the value in what we do. Appreciate you.
Great. Thank you, Jeffrey. Anyone else? Seeing none, we have anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay, well, let's bring it back then to council. And talk this up and get some permanent discussion toward staff regarding particularly the community partners and cultural programs allocations. Essentially, what we did there, we had a certain amount of money that we basically split three different ways, is what our direction was at the time. I believe we were in majority in that way, the Chamber, Main Street, and Wine Country to be equally situated, you know, for about $105,000. And also, just to make it clear, that I know that Main Street also has about $25,000, is it, Chris, on the BIA, the Business Improvement Assessment, that we don't necessarily have to give it to them, but we have always historically given Main Street that amount of money?
Yes, so the Main Street Association receives a pass-through, and Mr. Cornell can correct me, but I believe it's about $23,000 as of this last year, and that's through the Business Improvement Assessment for property owners and business owners in the defined area downtown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do receive that. That's a pass-through. That's essentially city funding. It can only be used for downtown promotional type of purposes within the district, and the city has historically provided that as a direct pass-through in addition to the general fund contribution.
Okay. So let's have a discussion then with council. Is everybody good with the way we have it set up? This is on in our agenda package there.
John, is the BIA, is that more like a property tax?
It's an assessment.
It's a additional amount that's assessed on, I believe, properties and business owners within the boundary areas of the district on the business license itself. So it's not set up like a traditional or like a more modern type of bid that would be set up more like what Travel Paso does. That's not how the downtown BIA is structured. It's set up under different laws from the 70s that have different components to it.
But the pass-through that comes from, it's not taken out of the general fund.
It's not taken, it's accounted for in a separate fund. However, that funding, the way it was set up, could theoretically be kept with the city, and the city could utilize it for downtown promotion directly as opposed to passing it through. It's an option for the city, and it's historically been done to pass that through directly to Main Street to do that on the city's behalf, more or less.
What wasn't originally set up?
When was it set up? I believe it was set up in the late 70s. I believe when we reviewed the employee parking lot discussion, I believe we covered this, and I believe it was set up in the late 70s.
We have to go back, and we have to find Mike Lesage's documents. That's where all that's
how far back, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Lesage, Attorney Mike Lesage set that up, and those are the documents we don't want to go back and find, apparently.
No. What's interesting there, too, Chris, is that, you know, we've always wanted to, the council direction was to give it back to Main Street rather than the Chamber, which Chamber has members in that same area, too. So they are getting a little more benefit as far as funding other than what we see here on our budget that we have planned. So, what, Tim Gregory?
Yeah, so I'm in agreement with the amount, but I think that Mr. Bosch made a good comment, and I think it'd be really fair to Main Street and the other two partners to have an understanding of their assessment, what they're to be doing. Obviously, if you have to, we're not expecting to do more with less, but some kind of a programmatic understanding of the funding, what they do with it, what they present, how they perform. And I think it's a really good idea because it's a wonderful tool for all the organizations, and especially with a change in Main Street now with the potential new leadership. I think it's really a good way to go to talk about it in the future. So, mm-hmm. And that would just be like staff direction to bring everybody together.
So I think what we should do here, just for staff's edification, you know, do a straw vote that we're okay with the distribution that we see here on paper. I mean, there was a question, but is everybody pretty much good?
Okay. Yeah. No.
No? Okay. That's why I just want to make sure that majority says that's kind of where we're going.
Well, okay. I think Mr. Wiesinger's comments aside, I think the, and Mr. Gregory's comments from a couple weeks ago, Main Street is a captive audience. There's only so many people, but businesses downtown. And it's small, and it's given a job to perform by the city. It's limited in scope. Wine Country Alliance is draws from a much larger group. It's not limited by the borders of the city. It goes out into the county. It goes far beyond. And it serves a much larger audience. It can, its members typically have larger business profiles, larger balance sheets, not all, but most. They're able to weather this downturn better than our downtown merchants are. I think keeping the status quo makes sense for this year. I don't think that $20,000 delta is going to do that much to help Wine Country Alliance. I just don't. Having clients in both areas, I just don't see it helping them that much. If you were to shift the entire balance to Wine Country Alliance, that might help, but I don't think this small amount is going to really help them that much.
Yeah.
So I think you ought to just leave it the way it is. Keep Chamber going. Chamber's doing some good stuff. I think keeping Main Street going is helpful, and I think Wine Country Alliance will figure this out on their own.
Yeah, I think point well taken, Chris. I know back in the day, our company, even though we were out at the airport, you know, we were members of the Main Street Association. I mean, I hope that their board can start reaching out, not just to those local in that one district. There should be plenty of other businesses that can support Main Street. But at any rate, okay, so that's what I want to make sure that we, majority. Fred Strong, go ahead.
Along that line, I like our current system, mainly because, yes, Main Street Alliance, they can draw much from a much larger area. But they also have a much larger expense because they go nationally and internationally to promote our area, our products. And that brings visitors to our area. And when the visitors get here, that's when the Chamber and Main Street come in. And they take care of those visitors and make them feel welcome and make them want to come back. The three of them work synergistically. And definitely Wine Country Alliance has a bigger budget because they are national and international in their efforts. But for what they do locally, it's appropriate what we're giving them, in my opinion.
Okay. Very good. Okay, this is a receive and file, and so what the staff was asking us to do, of course, was to give any direction further, you know, on these next 2 year goals, priorities, and budget outlined in this report. So I think, Chris, do you have enough based on what we've heard tonight?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll go ahead and then receive and file. Move on then to item 4, approval of the 2025 General Plan Annual Report. Darcy, or Warren?
Warren.
Warren will be making the report tonight. Let me get the PowerPoint queued up. All right. Good evening, Council. Members of the public, Warren Frace, Community Development Director. This is our annual report on progress with the general plan. So this is a government code requirement that we provide an annual report. This report has to also go to the California Department of Housing and Community Development. We've already filed that report with them. This has also been reviewed by the Planning Commission on a previous meeting. They are recommending acceptance of the report. So the general plan basically acts as the blueprint. It's the long-term future for the city in terms of how we're going to grow and develop, utilize land within it. City policies, including the zoning code, capital improvement programs, building permits, all are required to be consistent with the general plan. Our general plan has 8 elements. There are land use, open space, conservation, housing, circulation, safety, and noise. Those are state-required elements. In addition, we have an optional element, which is the parks and recreation element. So a key part of the general plan these days is the housing element. That's really what we're going to focus on tonight. That element is required by the state to have certain components. It also requires approval by the state Housing and Community Development Department. So we do, as part of the review, look at all the policies and their status for implementation. This is a process where all the city departments work through this annual review. There's 240 different policy actions in the general plan, plus the housing element that has additional policies. We basically identify, you know, the status of those. Basically, in summary, about 97% of the policies are either complete or ongoing or in process. There's been a number of updates to the general plan over the years. In 2020 and 21, there were significant updates to the land use element, specifically to accommodate the Olson South Chandler specific plan, Beechwood specific plan, and the Gateway Resort annexation. Circulation element was completely updated and redone in 2019, including a new needs list and traffic impact fees, or TIF fees. Noise element was also completely redone in 2019. And then the last version of the housing element was updated in 2020. That's known as the Cycle 6 housing element. And then we've updated the zoning code. That was in 2024. So moving on to housing, we'll talk about kind of housing production and how that is moving forward and progressing nicely within the city. So the general plan lays out a framework for how the city will develop. Key to that is the use of specific plans for development areas. So most of those areas are on the east side of town. This is the location of the Beechwood specific plan, the Olson South Chandler specific plan. These are approved and under construction basically right now. The green area is the North Chandler specific plan. That's the one area that doesn't actually have an approved specific plan. It was annexed to the city in the 80s, but we still need to do the EIR and specific plan. That's allocated in the general plan for 879 future housing units. Borky specific plan is the area up by Cuesta College. That's where the River Oaks development's occurring right now. That's a subset of the Borky specific plan. We also have the Union 46 specific plan. That was the first specific plan adopted in the 80s. That's just north of Union Road. It's kind of that purple area. And then finally, downtown is the Uptown Town Center specific plan, which is designated for about 1,000 infill units. So this table here basically just kind of shows the allocation of units and the progress of them. All of them are approved currently except North Chandler, as I mentioned. So River Oaks in the Borky specific plan, 270 units. These are all under construction. The first phase, which is the seniors traditions units, are pretty much wrapping up construction. They're moving into the reserve right now, which is the kind of single family product off to the east. The Olson South Chandler specific plan, 1,293 units approved in 2020. We have a number of what we call merchant builders under construction right now. So Shea Homes is developing kind of the area to the south of the Turtle Creek Creekside Park corridor. Spyglass Homes is doing the PA 13 area and then also the PA 9 area. They're also known as Ironside Homes. Kahov Navian Homes, also known as Kahov. They're doing planning areas 4 and 5, which are up in this area. And then Wathan Castanos, which is now Trumark Homes, they're doing areas 3, 8, 11, and 12. So they've got model homes under construction, and they're starting to sell units there as well. And then we have planning area 1, which was the affordable apartments that the Housing Authority has constructed. So that was 69 affordable units. Those were finaled a couple years ago. Those are all low and very low income family units. Beechwood's specific plan is located further to the south. So this is Creston Road along here, Virginia Peterson Schools here. This is Beechwood Drive, Meadowlark Road here. So 911 units, same mix of units basically as approved in the Olson specific plan, everything from apartments to single family. This one also includes a nice 8-acre community park with soccer fields, baseball fields, and a playground that's required to be completed by the 250th unit. Also includes the extension of Airport Road, basically from Meadowlark to Creston. This project is getting very close to starting construction. The first phase, which is Phase A, basically has plans ready to go. They're working on a final purchase agreement with a merchant builder to start that construction. Riverwalk Terrace, this is the old vacant pad next to JCPenney. This is another Paso Robles Housing Authority project that was partnered with the city. These are affordable senior apartments. So this was 79 low and very low income senior apartments. So this one was also completed a couple years ago. We've done a project with Habitat for Humanities up on Northern Vine Street. This was 9 low income sweat equity units. That means the folks that live in the units actually contributed and helped construct the units. So that project turned out very nicely as well. We also focus on market rate apartments. So the Arrive apartments were completed a couple years ago. That was 200 market rate apartment units. This was the Red Tail group that moved forward with that. They have a second project on Creston and Rolling Hills. This project is ready to go to permits right now. They are having some issues with getting construction funding right now, so we are working with them on some other options to get this project moving forward. So we'll probably have some additional information for the council on that fairly soon. You'll recall the council recently approved this project. This is the Oak at Ardmore. This is a mixed-use overlay on Ardmore, 154 for sale townhouse products. So these are a very small lot ownership type product. So this meets kind of a workforce, lower, you know, moderate income, or not moderate, market rate kind of niche in the market. So we're looking forward to seeing that one start to move forward. We don't have any applications for permits or grading permits on this one yet. Montage Condos, this was a 24-unit condominium project, also recently approved by the City Council. This is on Creston Road, just east of the river, another project that can move forward now. So in summary, if you look at all those projects, going back to 2021, when the sixth cycle of the housing element started, this is our tracking. So we track the units by their income categories. Low, extremely low is group. Then we have low, moderate, and above moderate. So for this last year, we didn't have any low or very low income units permitted. We did permit 23 low-income units, we permitted 24 moderate-income units, and 121 above-moderate units for a total of 168. That's kind of a drop-off from the previous 2 years where we were kind of, you know, between 200 and 300 units. All total during the cycle, we're at 1,128 units. We're required to build about 1,500 units, so we're about 75% through in terms of the units required. We still have another 3 years of reporting, so we expect that we will end up building more than the units that were allocated. We'll probably be a little low in the extremely low and low incomes, which is pretty typical. Those always require basically tax credit subsidies to provide those units. So those are the most challenging units to provide. So just a summary of the construction trends for the last year. Like I said, 168 units permitted. That was a 50% decrease from the previous year. But the main reason for that is almost all of these units were single family, and we didn't permit hardly any, I don't think we permitted any apartment units. So usually in the previous years where you see the 200 to 300 units, usually there was about 100 apartment units in there. So single family, which had been lagging for the last 20 years, is now our bright spot. And apartment buildings, you know, are kind of it's hard to time exactly where they go, so they might just show up on the next cycle. Overall, I think we're going to average out, you know, in the 200 to 300 units per year overall. Permitting 1,600 permits per year. That's been very consistent for the last 3 or 4 years, so that's consistent. Building inspections increased significantly, 66% increase. We're over 10,000 annual inspections, and that's mainly because of the number of single-family units. So multifamily requires a lot fewer inspections than single-family. So they're very labor-intensive. You can kind of see the trends in terms of the increase just on inspections. We did staff up on inspectors a couple years ago, expecting this to occur. So we are in a good position to be able to handle that load right now. And this table is just another view of it. This kind of shows the overall allocations. Our total requirements, 1,446. So we're at about 70% completion right now. And this chart basically kind of shows where we're trending. So you can see the trend line here, you know, for the 8-year period, and we're above where we need to be. We're a little low on the very low income units. Hopefully we can see those pop up. But this is basically what our allocation will be, or what our current RENA allocation is that we need to hit by 2028. So in summary, 97% of general plan policies are complete or ongoing. In terms of the 6-cycle housing element, we are basically moving along very well in terms of meeting those requirements. We expect to hit that total of 1,446 by the end of the period. So that'll conclude staff's report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Warren. Go ahead. Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, so Warren, the on the Riverwalk, was that counted in 2025? The river?
I think it was probably counted in 24.
Right. Oh, it was 24, okay.
Yeah, so I've kind of showed you projects that have been, that counted through this whole period.
So would that be considered very low?
Yeah, low, very low. So most of the low, very low income units are either the Sunrise Village project or the River Walk Terrace project.
Right. And between those two, that was about 140 units total?
Roughly that.
Thank you.
Councilman Bausch.
Thank you. Warren.
You have a question.
So we're starting to read that there may be a new category proposed. Since extremely low and very low are getting to be unaffordable. Have you seen anything about that?
Yes. So there's the next cycle of the regional housing needs allocation will be cycle 7. San Luis Obispo County is one of the first counties to go through cycle 7. We have preliminary numbers from HCD already for cycle 7. Cycle 7 does include what's now a new category, which is known as acutely low income. Those are for people making 0 to 15% of area median income. So we, just looking at it, we expect that our next allocation will probably include about 200 acutely low income units that we'll have to somehow accommodate through the housing element.
You anticipate, I've read both ways, where they expect those to be ownership as in granted to them and or rented with some kind of a subsidy. I'm not sure how that would look, either one. I don't know. This, the article I read didn't go into that detail. I don't know if that was just wishful thinking. I don't know where we would put 200 homes like that. And how, second part of that question, how long do you anticipate seventh cycle to last?
These are 8-year cycles. Okay. So it'll be through 2035, I think, this next allocation. We've been briefed by HCD. HCD staff does not have any details on how acutely low is going to work. I don't know if Chris might ask something.
The only other thing I was going to add, and your questions are good ones. One of the things when we did brief with HCD, a lot of questions came up, for, particularly for that category, is it's not just providing a unit. In a lot of cases, individuals at that level need wraparound services for
mental health,
that type of unit to be successful. And what we're really looking at are homeless shelters or something right
in that level
right. In some cases. And so that, and again, there weren't any answers on is there going to be supplemental funding to help provide services for individuals that are moving into those units. There wasn't a definition of what those units even look like, to Warren's point. So a lot more questions right now than answers. We're fully engaged with HCD. I would expect that we're going to be heavily engaged with them over the next year or so to continue to ask those types of questions.
I think Warren has done and staff has done a great job of meeting the RENA numbers. So thank you for that. Thank you for keeping us apprised of what has been done, what still needs to be done, for engaging the builders and getting them to help us be successful in those numbers. It's a partnership. We get that. We don't build anything, but we work with those that do build and work with those that try to either rent or own, move in. We need that partnership. It goes, everybody has a role to play. RENA is a good goal to aspire to, but it's still a goal. It's not something that we can necessarily control by ourselves as the city. So we recognize what a critical role you play in that success. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a good point. That really is a partnership with a number of both profit and nonprofits to, you know, move the needle on this issue. And I think one other thing just be aware of, SLOCOG is in charge of distributing the RENA allocation among the cities within the county. SLOCOG is actually going to be formally objecting to our RENA allocation. They do believe there's some errors in the methodology that was used. So you will be hearing about that. I think they'll be taking that action later this month to formally object to the numbers. Hopefully, we'll get some adjustments down. But there, as the city manager mentioned, you know, we're very engaged in the objection process as part of that.
Thank you.
Councilman Strong.
At this point in time, the only people I know of would be capable of meeting that new allocation area are the San Luis Obispo Housing Authority, which actually can go all the way down to that level. But they have very limited resources, too, depending on what they get from the federal government. The other one is some private organizations that now are being sponsored mostly by very wealthy sports people, et cetera, generally because we don't have any major league teams in our area. We have a problem unless we can somehow hitchhike on one of those. So we're going to be having a difficult time, and this is the future.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, just one more question. So to get our current stage of our RENA numbers, Ardmore and the Red Tail projects will get us over that number. If they come about.
Yeah, those two projects alone will get us to the total cumulative okay. number.
All right. Great.
It won't get us to the, you know, the very low income number.
No, but
there was,
okay, thank you.
Councilman Beal.
Great report. So those two projects will get us to the total number, but not necessarily some of the mid to lower categories, right?
Correct.
Okay. Couple of questions. How did the land for Sunrise Villas, how did that work out from the developer in terms of getting that to Housing Authority? What was the mechanism that made that happen?
So that was part of the specific plan process and the development agreement negotiation. So there was a lot of give and take in terms of, you know, that process. So one of the points that was negotiated by the city and ultimately approved by the council was that the developer was required to dedicate that site, which is about 2 acres, to the city. And then at that point, the city had the choice to then transfer it to a nonprofit, which is what we did. We transferred it to the Housing Authority, and then the Housing Authority was able to get the tax credits to fund the project and then build it. So it was part of the negotiation of the specific plan.
Exactly. And do rehabilitated units count towards any of these numbers? Do we have any of, I know that there are a few things in the pipeline, possibly, but would that be outside of meeting the RITA numbers?
Well, so rehabbing units and preserving existing affordable units is covered in the housing element. If they're existing units, they don't actually count as new units. We are required to do that in addition to building the new units.
Right. Because I know a few properties, they're sort of running to the end of their kind of Department of Ag kind of life cycle, so.
Yeah, those are considered at-risk units. So there is a section in the housing element identifying all the, quote, at-risk units, and then we do have policies in the housing element, you know, basically directing the city to take proactive steps to intervene, to extend those affordable covenants.
Right. I mean, every nonprofit partner I've spoken with talks about how, what a good partner the city is to work with. So, you know, I thank you for being very assertive in this work. It takes so much work between the public, private, and the government, really, to make these projects go. The other thing I think it's important for the community to understand, like, these specific plans were established a long time ago, and the idea was, in general, you could have this many units, it would work out to this many bodies, at a certain time, we could have a certain population at build out, right? But the things that we're seeing right now in terms of construction, that's the long, long, long road to get to the construction phase. Right, all the public hearings that have happened, all of the workshops. I mean, a lot of these things were initially approved 20 years ago, more formally or more specifically approved in terms of permitting and plans like 5 years ago. Can you tell me a little bit about the circulation enhancements that are in the pipeline and required of some of the East Side developers?
Yeah, so the specific plans that are we're dealing with right now, Olson and both Beechwood, those were both annexed into the city around 2004-2005 with the assumption that they were going to go to construction fairly quickly. The Great Recession set those projects back basically 10 to 15 years. So they didn't actually get to entitlement until 2020, almost 15 years later. Now they're starting, you know, we're seeing the units under construction. All those projects are subject to EIRs, environmental review. Part of the environmental review is the traffic analysis. They are required to mitigate their share of new impacts that they create both on their site and off-site. So we do have a traffic engineer that modeled these projects very specifically in terms of how traffic would travel throughout the community. So they ended up, both projects, Beechwood and Olson, have a series of what we call mitigation measures to improve different intersections throughout town. So you'll probably notice that at 13th Street, the bridge crossing, the three signals, they now have those right turn, free right turn arrows added. So that was a requirement of the Olson specific plan. So they paid and installed that work right now. They have to also do widening at Niblick and Crescent Road, that intersection. We expect that to start this summer. They also have to do widenings at the Niblick-Crescent Road intersection. That's subject to start this summer as well. There's a new street light or signal light that's been installed at Scott Street and Crescent Road. It's not operational yet. That was the responsibility of Olson as well. So those are projects they have to do. Beechwood has a series of projects on Charlet Road that they're responsible for. There's different triggers in terms of when they have to complete those projects based on the number of units that have been built. So that is kind of a overall summary of kind of how these projects are required to deal with their share of traffic. They don't have to fix existing traffic problems. They just have to deal with whatever increment of new traffic they're adding.
Right. I think it's important for people to remember that there's construction happening. There will be, you know, that will be, people will be moving into that area. And people are talking about traffic, you know, sort of crossing the bridges. We have had a very nominal population increase in the last 5 years. I think I saw something recently. So it's not like all of a sudden we have more population. What we have seen is less, you know, student transportation that has really increased the burden of some of the roadways. But I want the community to know that there are these other mitigation measures going on around circulation that are coming down the path, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think another thing that Public Works is working on is a signal master plan. So a lot of our signals are fairly old technology. They haven't been optimized or networked, basically, to, you know, optimize the flow of traffic. So I think that's kind of some low-hanging fruit that we can take advantage of that will actually improve things quite a bit. So over the next few years, I think we'll start to roll that program out as well. So that hopefully will, you know, make a difference.
And might we be talking about an adaptive light system?
Well, I think adaptive is a certain type of optimization that might be considered. I think that's what the master plan will identify exactly what the best, most effective way will be.
Thank you.
My question, I guess, probably for Mr. Huat. I mean, I know that the seventh cycle of HCD, San Luis Obispo County got hit first, so to speak, in the whole state. But you guys, as far as city manager, kind of grouping up and trying to figure out how it can be done or push back and give them more recommendation. Can you kind of elaborate on what you've been doing with this coming forward?
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, so as Mr. Fraze mentioned, SLOCOG is the lead agency on the process. But that being said, they have been very much engaged with the city managers for the seven incorporated cities. We did meet with HCD reps a couple weeks ago now, along with our community development directors, to start to dig through the calculations and the numbers and how they arrived at the number of units that they're going to allocate to the county and then ultimately to the cities. And that methodology, as well as looking at, as discussed earlier, some of these new categories, there was a significant amount of concern raised on all ends of the discussion. Unfortunately, at this point, those individuals that we were talking to, they're explaining the data and the policy that has been kind of pushed down to them and then out to the counties. So we are going to be continuing to meet to determine if there are some additional steps that we can take, and there may, you know, require some additional action from the council in terms of how we choose to engage HCD or potentially our elected officials on this, but I think that there was a lot of concern, not just again the number of units in totality, but again those categories, especially that acutely low category, without any definition and without any understanding of what the state seeks to accomplish through that category. It's very challenging for cities to begin to even contemplate planning to how to absorb those units. So a lot more discussion to come. Just know that we are engaged at the staff level fully on this. And again, unfortunately, San Luis Obispo County is the tip of the spear for the seventh cycle. This is definitely going to be something that we're going to be keeping engaged on over the next several months, and we'll continue to provide the council relevant updates as we know it.
Very good. Thanks, Chris. Warren, question to you. Back when I first got on council 20 years ago, we were talking about the 44,000 planning threshold that our city has. Technically, are we still on that number? I mean, with all the ADUs and things that's been pushed forward since and changing density, so to speak, are we still there with that number? Or what? I think most people realize that, you know, we don't want to grow past 44,000, but I mean, can you give a little elaboration on that number and how it's reflecting in our general plan?
Yeah, so the framework of the general plan was approved in 2003. One of the key policies of the general plan was that the city build-out population would be 44,000 folks. So the land use, the distribution of future units was all scaled and based on that. So ADUs, you brought that up, those are outside the general plan because those are state mandated, so we're not counting those, we're not required to count them, and we can't actually, you know, control them like regular units. So those are in addition to the 44,000. But that said, even though we're building 200 to 300 units per year, you've seen, you know, our population estimates from the state, they're either flat or negative, regardless of how many units. And what's happening, you know, in 2003, this was a community of families where, you know, you had 4 to 5 people in houses. So overall, we almost had 3 people per house on average. That's population per unit, which is how we actually calculated the 44,000. You divide that, and that gives you the number of units, and that's what got, you know, applied to the specific plans.
Yeah.
But the population per unit continues to drop every year.
Less than 2 per house, isn't it now?
Well, it's around 2.4, I think, right now. Yeah. But, you know, a 0.3, you know, drop is a pretty significant number when you start to, you know, multiply it out. And the trend is, and everything we're seeing, is it's going to keep going down. And you see that at the specific plans. Most of the folks out there buying those houses are retirees. They're not people starting families that are going to, you know, have a lot of kids. So I don't think we're ever going to hit 44,000 just because of the demographic changes that are happening, you know, nationally, throughout the world, really, in terms of declining, you know, birth rates, that sort of thing. So we're going to keep building more units, but, and we can build a lot more units than originally envisioned in 2003 and still stay under 44,000, I guess, is kind of the takeaway from where the trends are right now.
That's right. Yeah, I remember the understanding, basically, the 44,000 as a planning threshold. In other words, you guys use that number for figuring out the size of pipes and water and, you know, the waste treatment plant, all that kind of stuff goes upon that number. And so it's not really saying that we'll have exactly 44,000. It could be higher or lower, but that's what you're using as a plan.
And you never actually get to that. You end up updating, you know, 10 years ahead of that point, and then you determine a new number and a new, threshold.
Yeah, that's why I asked. I was just wondering if it's still there. Councilman Sproul.
Be cautious on some of this. If you look at the actual census that the state did, our region, our county, was one of the only areas in the state that actually grew in population in the last census. And that's a yearly census. It's not a 10-year census. But also, in our region, Paso Robles was the only city that grew. Every other city lost population.
I think, well, San Luis.
It's that much. I mean, 32 people.
Wasn't there two?
That's all. 32 people.
I think San Luis and Paso were the two that actually had a plus net number. Everybody else had a negative number.
Yeah, there were a population. Couple. Most declined, but yeah. I think a couple, right. couple yep. increased.
But be very careful because the demographics are changing, definitely. We're still going to have growth. But how we're going to have it, we're going to have to stay flexible. We need to stay flexible.
Okay. Chris Bausch, go ahead.
Warren, along those lines, if we increase beyond the 44,000 because we can, do you look then at housing becoming more dense because of cost of and the expense of building those homes? Where do you see that trend ending up?
Yeah, what we're seeing, and we see that throughout town right now, is more compact or more dense type of development. That's where affordability is. You know, when Olson was annexed back in 2003, you know, the assumption was these were going to be quarter acre lots with single family houses that were going to sell for like $250,000. Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
And now these projects getting built, they're 5,000 square foot lots and they're selling for over $1 million each. So single family as a product just for families and workforce, just they don't match up like they did 20 years ago, unfortunately. So if we're going to grow the jobs, we're going to grow the families, whatnot, they're going to need a lot smaller, more efficient units. And I think that's what the Ardmore townhouses is probably where things are going. I think that project's going to be kind of a good one to watch and see, you know, who ends up being able to live there. But I think that's what the future looks like, is more of that type of product.
So it sounds like instead of a zero lot line, we're going vertical we'll see some zero lot line, 5,000 square foot, million-dollar homes, but we'll see probably as those phase out, because it's just going to be so expensive. I don't know that we're going to have the jobs to support that. We'll go vertical to increase affordability.
That's where the trends are pointing.
Thank you.
Okay, good for council. We'll open up then to public. Anybody wishing to address this item, please come forward. Bob?
Or the numbers you gave for completed units this year, is that being negatively impacted by the number of homes that are construction seems to have come to a standstill on Lene Road? And I was wondering if there's been any discussion by the council at all to try to help those developers complete those that project so those homes just don't rot away.
Okay. Anyone else? Anyone online?
Yes, sir. We have Jan Albin.
Okay. Jan, can you hear us? Go ahead.
I can. Thank you. Good evening, Council. Couple of questions, and I missed a little bit of the beginning of this, so hopefully I'm not redundant here. My question is, I hear a lot of rumblings that the state is going to start requiring the cities to not only develop, of course, their RENA numbers, but homeless housing as well. So, and I have another question, but can I get the answer to that one? Have we received anything that says we're going to have to start developing projects that include homeless housing?
Well, I think our city manager, Chris Huot, kind of alluded to that 0 to 15% of income. Is that pretty much what that would be related to?
Mayor, yes. So for the next RENA cycle, as we talked about earlier, there's this acutely low category for individuals with 0 to 15% income range. HCD, the state, has not fully defined what that means or what potentially those units would be defined at or look like. So I can't definitively say yes, but it certainly seems that it would fall closer to those type of units. Again, a lot more to come there, though.
Right. All right, Jan, your second question.
Okay, and I'm sorry, yes. So my second question is that when we hear about new housing developments everywhere, the constant comment, redundant as it may be, is that people are always talking about, and it's true, we do not have the infrastructure to handle the housing that's projected, let's say. And particularly because we've got nowhere to go with the roads. So the question is always, how do we adhere to the RENA numbers when the RENA numbers are killing us by demanding that we build houses that we don't have the roads to support? So I guess my question is, what are we doing to upgrade and accelerate the infrastructure and the roads and to get a handle on the situation of the traffic? Because I live here on the east side, I live over by Quail Run, and it's a mess all the time. It's a mess. So the more houses you build over in this side, which you're going to, we don't have the roads to handle that. So I want to know what the plan is for that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think you probably missed what Warren was saying, but maybe you can relay a little bit about the improvements that are being put on all these projects to improve circulation, Warren.
Yeah, so we mentioned that the city is constrained by the number of river crossings. So we have the Niblick Road River crossing, the Creston Road crossing, and then the Union or the State Route 46 crossing. So the specific plans will be improving the different intersection nodes along Niblick and Creston. That'll improve flow, but there's a limit to how much improvement we can make. really the key to the long-term build-out of the city. So in addition to the general plan land use element that talks about the additional housing and commercial development, we also have the circulation element. The circulation element has included Airport Road as this east side arterial, going back to, you know, basically the 1980s. So there's a segment of Airport Road that was built with the Olson South Chandler specific plan, because right now these projects, they have to go down Sherwood Road, Niblick Road to get out. This segment of Airport Road's intended to connect up through North Chandler and then through the new interchange at 46 and then up to the airport. As you know, the airport's intended, you know, with the spaceport to be a jobs generating employment center. So if you kind of start to look at it, if we have all the jobs up here at the airport and all the housing here, and we have a new arterial road that connects it all, that can take a lot of load off the traffic in terms of folks don't need to get on Niblick to drive to San Luis Obispo to work, which is a lot of the kind of traffic we generate here. So that's the idea. That's the vision of the general plan. But it does depend on this whole new airport road connector, which is a significant infrastructure element that needs to be accommodated. North Chandler Ranch is where a lot of the additional housing in the future is going to go, and that project's going to need to help build most of New Airport Road. So that's with this next housing cycle, we will be talking most likely about North Chandler and Airport Road and the 46 interchange are going to be key decision points moving forward.
Got it. And then Bob Simone.
And may I ask, Warren, do you have a timeline on that Airport Road?
No, there is none, Jan, other than just development through the Chandler Ranch area, which could be in the next 15 years, probably, I would imagine. Somewhere in there, maybe.
All right.
10 to 20.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jan. All right. And then Bob had a question, too.
Yeah. So I think the reference was to this project on Lanay Road. This is part of the Olson specific plan. This was planning area 13. So this is a courtyard residential project, 107 units plus 107 ADUs. So this project was under construction. The first 25 units were finaled late last year. They lost their construction funding around the first of the year. So the project basically has stopped at this point. The city's taken action to work with the owner to fence and secure the site. We're doing constant surveillance, the extra police patrols and whatnot, just to make sure that there's no safety, vandalism type issues starting to occur there. We do have a meeting scheduled with the ownership group later this week to talk about their progress on getting the project restarted and refinanced. So it's an unfortunate thing that they lost their financing. We're hopeful that we can help them get the project restarted soon.
About what percentage are they complete with their units that they have?
Well, overall, it's probably like 80% complete in terms of construction. Like this first phase right here is done.
Right.
You know, a couple of these other modules were, 90-95% complete, but we do have some units that are still exposed, some that are just studs. They were moving very quickly and they just pulled the plug on it, right, unfortunately. So there's been a lot of weather damage that's going to take some time and money to repair.
Remedy, right. Okay, thank you. All right, we'll bring back council. Any further discussion or questions? But tonight they're asking us to receive and file and provide, approve the 2025 general plan. So any further discussion from council?
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the 2025 general plan annual report, direct staff to submit to the California Department of Housing and Community Development.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion. Okay, we'll call for the question, please.
Councilmember.